I'm your number one fan.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
My mom and dad are me.
Hello.
Hi, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Happy August.
Not yet.
Oh.
This is the last episode of July.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's when we do August movies. Yes?
Yes, it is. Speaking of, I have August movies for us.
Hooray!
If you clicked on this and you have no idea who we are, we're the Killer Cuties Podcast. Welcome in.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
I appreciate you being here. Anyways, I am going to tell you what new horror movies are coming out in August.
Yes, please.
And Katie's going to tell you news, and then we're going to talk about The Orphanage.
The 2007 version. Don't make the same mistake I did by watching the 2014 version.
I didn't know there was one, so I apologize that that happened to you.
Thank you. It's on Tubi if you ever want to watch it.
I'm okay. Catch us on episode 1217 where we talk about The Orphanage 2014.
Yeah, because we've run out of all other movies.
Yeah, we watched everything else.
Yeah.
All right, August horror movies. Coming out on the 8th. It's a big day. We got like 5 movies coming out. First up, Weapons. We've talked about it before. It's the new Zach Cregger movie. Little summary of that, when all but one child from the same class mysteriously vanish on the same night at exactly the same time, a community is left questioning who or what is behind their disappearance. I was very excited for this, and then they got in a little hot water recently. This isn't my news section, but kind of, because they put out a little teaser trailer that was animated, and it was pretty clear that it was AI.
Oh no.
They have quietly taken it down after all of the comments were commenting on the fact that it was AI. And they haven't said anything else about that. So, unfortunate. Anyways, moving on. Also on the 8th, we've got Strange Harvest coming out. Detectives are thrust into a chilling hunt for Mr. Shiny, a sadistic serial killer from the past, whose return marks the beginning of a new wave of grotesque otherworldly crimes tied to a dark cosmic force.
Okay, alien.
Sure, cosmic would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have Sight. While inspecting an abandoned military site, Neil suffers a mind-altering time distortion. Soon after, haunting hallucinations of strangers and troubling events from the past bleed into Neil's reality. One vision is so traumatic, it leads to an accident that nearly blinds his only son. With his life unraveling and his son's sight hanging in the balance, I don't know why it's hanging in the balance if he's already been blinded, but that's fine, Neil must uncover the secrets of the facility and the soul-shattering truth of his hallucinations.
Okay, that sounds really stupid, but okay.
Oh. You heard it here first. It sounds really stupid. Next up, we have Birthright. When a pregnant woman is bequeathed a home from an estranged aunt, she and her girlfriend, gay, leave the city behind to begin a new chapter. But when a karmic debt threatens the life of their unborn child, they soon discover their place in the cursed history of the town. We're getting a lot of plots that feel very convoluted.
Yeah, that was a lot to take in.
Yeah.
But hey, LGBT?
Right. If there's girlfriends, I'm in. You know?
Yeah.
I'm a simple lad. All right. Shaman is the last one coming out on the 8th. A missionary converting an indigenous community in a remote Ecuadorian volcano must come to terms with her own faith when her son is possessed by dark forces older than her religion.
Okay.
They live in the volcano, apparently.
Okay, that's a choice.
These movies sound so good. I can't wait to see all of them.
Yeah.
On the 15th, we have 2 movies. One is Witchboard. In New Orleans, Emily and her fiance Christian are opening their new dream cafe, but their dreams are dashed when Emily finds an ancient cursed Witchboard, an ancient artifact that once served as a gateway to the spirit world. Ouija board, I think. As Emily becomes increasingly captivated by the board's ability to summon spirits, they find themselves trapped in a deadly web of witchcraft and dark desires. This one actually does have early good reviews, but we've talked about that before. Where like, we don't really know if that holds a lot of weight, but maybe promising.
Who knows? Who's to say?
Yeah. Next, we have Jimmy and Stiggs. A shitstorm of bad news sends out-of-work filmmaker Jimmy Lang spiraling into a bender during which he claims to have been abducted by aliens. Fearing they'll come back, he contacts his old friend Stiggs to help him gear up for war. When the sun sets, the duo are thrown into a hallucinatory explosion of aliens, drugs, booze, and all-out carnage. This feels like horror Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
I've never actually seen Bill and Ted, which so I don't know if that's true, but...
All that is, you know, the chainsaw one with Alan Tudyk.
Tucker and Dale.
Tucker and Dale.
Got it. Yeah.
That's horror Bill and Ted.
Oh, yeah. That's actually more fair.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anyways, that one's presented by Eli Roth. He's producing it. So if you're a fan of him, maybe you'll like it.
He's made movies.
He has made films. Some people have watched them. Anyways, on 8/20, we have Hell House LLC Lineage, the next installment in that franchise. Haunted by visions of recurring nightmares years after a near-death experience, Vanessa finds herself living in the town of Abaddon, unable to break free from its unexplainable hold on her. When people around her suddenly and inexplicably begin to die, she soon uncovers her terrifying connection to the Abaddon Hotel, the Carmichael Manor, and the mysterious murders that have been occurring there for decades.
Okay.
I kind of like the Hell House series, so I'm excited for that one.
Okay.
Last, on the 29th, we are finally having The Toxic Avenger. When a downtrodden janitor, Winston Goose, is exposed to a catastrophic toxic event, he's transformed into a new kind of hero, the Toxic Avenger. Now, Toxie must rise from outcast to savior, taking on ruthless corporate overlords. Jeez, I can't talk. And corrupt forces who threaten his son, his friends, and his community. In a world where greed runs rampant, justice is best served radioactive.
Crazy.
I'm probably going to see it. It sounds very anti-capitalist, which I like, so.
Yeah. And it's not rated.
That's be interesting.
Yeah, there's that.
There is.
Okay, well, that's what you have to look forward to next month. And I've got some news. I won't talk nearly as long as you just did.
Yeah, sorry. That was kind of a lot. They looked so short when I was putting them up.
No, not at all. Not at all. Okay, well, first, Matthew Lillard. We find the chance to talk about him in every episode.
Hell yeah.
His whiskey brand, Macabre Spirits, just announced a new whiskey called Hell Is Not Mocked. It is a 98 proof Texas whiskey in a beautiful matte black bottle. It's actually very beautiful. It's got like a little stage on it with a performer in the middle. It's paired with a short story written by Matthew's roommate from his time working at the Renaissance Festival 35 years ago. Mm. His name is Christopher Buhlman. Matthew describes Buhlman's writing as gritty and unforgettable, so he matched it with this run of whiskey that he calls just as bold and haunted. According to Bloody Disgusting, the story that it's paired with is a dark Western gothic tale set in a sun-scorched land where the dead don't stay buried.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. He did a collaboration with Flanagan once too, didn't he? With a story that Flanagan wrote?
Oh, I don't know. Did he?
That's I'm fine. Almost positive that he did. I feel like we talked about it on the
podcast. Yeah, we probably did.
But it was a while ago, yeah. But he partnered with him. Flanagan wrote a story and he paired a whiskey with it too. That's fun that he's like continuing to do that.
Yeah. It's cute.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
This is only the second whiskey he's run, so if that happened, it was their first and only other whiskey.
Oh, that's so sexy. I hope I didn't just lie.
Yeah. I thought the first one was more D&D vibes.
Oh.
But I could be wrong.
Yes. His first one came with an 80-page novella written by Mike Flanagan.
Cute. 80 pages. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So fun. Well, anyway, keep an eye out for that one.
Yeah. If you like whiskey and horror.
Zombies.
What's next?
So there weren't a lot of huge newses, so I'm just going to rapid fire a bunch of little ones. And then we can talk about the orphanage.
Love that.
Okay, so VHS Halloween will be released on October 3rd on Shudder, and Paco Plaza, who did Wreck, is doing a segment. Yeah, so fun.
Oh my
so
gosh. Wreck, I like slept. That. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wreck was good. Weirdly, yeah. I'm going to talk about Wreck later in this episode. Isn't that weird?
Oh, yeah, that is weird. Yeah. Alien Earth got a 4-minute long sneak peek. You can go watch that now.
Mm.
Roger L. Jackson, the voice of Ghostface, is set to narrate the newly announced Scream franchise's behind-the-scenes audiobook titled Your Favorite Scary Movie.
Oh, fun.
Yep. Shin Godzilla's 4K remaster got a trailer in preparation for its August 14th re-release in theaters.
Okay.
Tickets are now on sale for the unrated Peter Dinklage movie, The Toxic Avenger.
There we go. Makes sense,
seeing as that's coming out in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
There are 3 new official posters for The Strangers Chapter 2. You can go and check those out. And the new Samurai Weaving horror movie Eenie Meenie just got an R rating for bloody violence and nudity. Except I wrote bloody silence and dudity. So I'm glad I read that correctly the first time.
Yeah, you really nailed it.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow, all anyways, fun, yeah. Fun stuff.
Fun little tiny tidbits.
Yeah.
Oh, also the Buffy reboot got its cast. You can go check that out too if you're interested. I didn't recognize anybody.
Yeah, they announced some of the new cast, it looks like. It looks like kind of the new generation. I don't know as though they've confirmed anybody besides Sarah, right?
Yeah,
as
I don't think so.
Well, returning?
As returning, yeah, just her.
Yeah.
Which is too bad because Angel could come back.
Yeah. I feel like the vampires coming back, I mean, they could just make up like some campy excuse as to why they've aged and it would be fine. But if they're still vampires, it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
They could and have also, been, like, Angel probably dies. Oh.
Does he die? Does Angel die?
Why would I ever tell you that? I'm not spoiling the show for you.
Your face said it when I was like, yeah, they could bring Angel back.
Oh, no, I meant just because, you know, vampires age.
Yeah.
Also, death is not the end. They could bring back anybody.
That's so true.
It's a supernatural show. So,
yeah.
Even if a character dies, that doesn't necessarily mean that you will never see them again.
Yeah, so true. Maybe he'll come back as his IRL dad. Oh, no, that doesn't make sense either.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, well. I don't know.
He's not from this century.
he could come back as one of the new generation's dad. And then there could be like just like a little comment from Buffy about, wow, you just look so familiar.
You look like an ex.
Yeah.
That would be funny. Yeah. I've already heard the theories and stuff about how people want to bring back characters who may have passed. So
yeah.
I think there's a lot of options they could have for that.
Yeah.
The world is their oyster.
But yeah, go check out the casting news, the posters, the trailers.
Just do it all. Do it, lady.
Check it all out.
All right. Should we talk about The Orphanage?
Let's do it.
Okay. Little summary. Laura has happy memories of her childhood in an orphanage. She convinces her husband to buy the place and convert it into a home for sick children. One day, her adopted son, Simone, disappears. Simone is critically ill, and when he is still missing, several months later, he is presumed dead. Grief-stricken, Laura believes she hears spirits who may or may not be trying to help her find the boy. That's from IMDb. It was directed by J.A. Boyana. The screenplay was by Sergio G. Sanchez. It stars Belen Rueda and Fernando Cayo. It had a budget of $5.3 million. Don't worry, I did the conversion from euros for everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And it made about $76 million at the box office. It currently has a 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb, a 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd, an 86% audience score, and an 87% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Very similar.
Very similar.
Yeah. That's what we're looking at.
Cool. This movie's just horror Phantom of the Opera.
Well, no one gets kidnapped.
In Phantom of the Opera or in The Orphanage?
In The Orphanage.
Well, he goes missing.
Okay.
Orphanage is the opera house.
Okay.
Benigna is and Tomas are Madame Giry and the Phantom. There's a party where everyone's wearing masks. That's masquerade. There's the weird thing where she has to put the orphanage back to its former glory. That's literally how the movie starts, the play, the movie, all of it. I'm just saying.
I guess I didn't draw those parallels, but thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
New ownership. The orphanage is under new ownership, so is the opera house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great segue into movies that actually were inspirations for the film. To prepare for the role as Laura, Bayona had Rueda watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind and The Innocents. Kind of makes sense. He said Close Encounters, but obviously ghosts instead of aliens. And then The Innocents makes sense if you've seen it. But yeah. Cute. I know the writer, too, said that there were a lot of comparisons made to other films. And he always found it funny because the films that people would give him didn't have anything in common with each other. But they were all being related to this movie.
Yeah.
So he said he got The Others a lot, which we've talked about. And then as soon as Del Toro was announced as one of the producers, people said Pan's Labyrinth. And he's like, you look at Pan's Labyrinth and you look at The Others and they have nothing in common. Nothing. But everybody was saying that this movie was a little bit of both of those. So he thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, what? Because it's from Spain? Because it's Guillermo del Toro? Like, what? That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I guess A Kid Goes Missing, we're just seeing it from her perspective in Pan's Labyrinth. So it's, she doesn't feel like she's missing to us. But
yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I can see pieces of it that are similar.
Okay. I haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth in a long time.
Oh, it's so good. I haven't either. Yeah. But that movie,
I remember,
slaps.
Yeah. I watched it once and then I've listened to the soundtrack all the time.
Yeah. I think the first time I saw it was in Spanish class. They let us watch it.
Oh, fun.
And I was like, hell yeah. I love Spanish class.
Yeah, right? But yeah, no, this was an international co-production film between Spain and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2008, it was Spain's official submission to the Best Foreign Language Film category of the 80th Annual Academy Awards.
It was. It did not make the nominations, which is a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame.
Yeah. Well,
where is it? We'll tell you later when we rate it.
Oh, yeah. My feelings on this movie are...
Mum.
You'll never know until 25 minutes from now.
it's a secret.
Shh. It did. It opened at the Cannes Film Festival in 2007. It got a 10-minute standing ovation. And even though the American Oscars snubbed it, maybe, find out in 25 minutes if we think it was snubbed or not, the Goya Awards, which are kind of the Spanish equivalents, they did not. This was nominated for 14 Goya Awards. It ended up winning 7 of them, the most nominations and the most wins of any film that year.
Crazy.
It won Best Original Screenplay, New Director, Art Direction, Production Supervision, Sound, Special Effects, and Makeup and Hairstyling. And then it was nominated, but it lost in Best Film, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, New Actor, Costume Design, Original Score, and Editing, which was won by Rec.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there we go. Tying it back to the news.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
Fun.
Yeah,
it was the second. No, sorry. It scored the biggest box office opening for a film in its native Spain, just barely outgrossing Pan's Labyrinth from the year before. Speaking of, tying it back.
We're just connecting dots all over the goddamn place today.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. It's crazy. It's so unlike us.
Mm-hmm. But it also outgrossed Shrek the Third and Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, which both came out that year as well. In Spain. But yes, in Spain, to be clear.
Yeah.
That's, it did very well.
Yeah. Lots of fun little Easter eggs throughout this one.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite, well, first of all, growing up, did your grandparents have in their bathroom a like wooden plaque with like a printed beach scene and then a poem called The Footprints
of the God and how he's in the
I
hardest times
you.
In the hardest times there was only one set of footprints and that's when God was carrying you.
Yes.
I don't remember them having the plaque, but I do remember that story.
Yeah, my grandparents had a bathroom designed to match the plaque that they bought with the
footprints. They designed around
the plaque. Yeah, it was all like beachy.
Yep. That's really fun.
Yeah, anyway. When Laura and Simone are walking on the beach, Simone's footprints vanish for a few steps before reappearing. So it's like foreshadowing of him.
Yeah, it's not, to be clear, in the film, it is not a reference to...
No.
God, Carrie.
No.
Hard times.
No.
Yeah.
So silly.
Was that the only Easter egg you were going to talk about, or...?
No, I have several more.
Yeah. Two more. Great. Tell them to us.
During the paranormal investigation conference thing, mm-hmm. the paranormal investigator guy explains that the Herald of Death appears as oneself. Mm-hmm. So like your doppelganger.
Yeah.
And then at the end, the climax, if you will, when Laura commits suicide after finding Simone's body, she sees a vision of herself as a child. That's her doppelganger, her Herald of Death.
Yeah.
And then she dies. Good one.
Yeah.
A little tie.
Yeah. What was your other one?
Oh, yeah. The Peter Pan thing. The Peter Pan thing was all foreshadowing, too. During the scene when Simone and Laura are talking about Peter Pan, a lot of their dialogue foreshadows the end of the movie. Simone asks Laura if Peter Pan comes to get him, was she going to go, too? That is a little foreshadowing. And then Peter Pan has also always been sort of, like, theorized to be, like, an angel that takes kids to heaven.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Cute.
I have more to add.
Okay. I think I know what you're going to add. And that was in my section of Guillermo del Toro fun facts, not Easter egg fun facts. But the please.
That's crazy because they don't have anything to do with Guillermo del Toro.
Okay. Well, you do yours and then we'll go back to my GDT stuff.
Yeah. I think I know what you're talking about. And that's also in my del Toro facts.
Oh, good.
We're aligned.
Okay.
I was going to say when Laura is changing the house to make it look like it was in the past, she sets up one room as the bedroom. And she has 8 beds. There were only 6 orphans, including Tomas. So that could be seen as a foreshadowing that both her and Simone were both going to be joining as the 7th and 8th orphans.
Yeah.
And then the other little Easter egg was Laura's necklace is a St. Anthony medallion. And St. Mm-hmm. Anthony was the patron saint of lost items.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who would your patron saint be?
Can I tell you, I once received a coin, kind of medallion type thing, of a patron saint that was gifted to me. And it was, I can't remember who their name, but it was the patron saint of anxiety and mental illness. So,
oh, dear. Well.
So someone thought that that was representative of me, and they were right.
Yeah, cute. I asked my ex-nun great aunt who mm-hmm. smuggled me off a cruise ship into Mexico for my first beer when I was 18 years old.
Hell yeah.
Who she thinks my patron saint should be.
Yeah.
And she said, Saint Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals.
Oh, that's very nice. That's very on brand.
Yes. I thought so too.
I don't really know all of the patron saints.
Me neither. That's the only one I know.
Yeah. I think I'd be the patron saint of hanging out, chilling.
Yeah. Relaxing.
Having a nap.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like me.
Cozy.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can talk about our GDT fun facts.
Great.
Yeah.
Kick us off.
Okay, thanks. He's uncredited, but plays a part in the movie. He plays the emergency room doctor who fixes Laura's leg after she hurts her leg.
Yep, he's in it.
I don't know that I, even after having just watched this film, I don't know that I can tell you what he looks like.
Oh, okay.
I would not recognize him in a lineup.
I think I would.
Okay. Any director. I don't think I could. I can't think of a single director that'd be like, oh yeah, that's what's his face.
I think I could identify Del Toro.
Taika Waititi. Identify James Wan. Oh yeah, Taika Waititi.
James Wan. Lee Wan L.
No, I couldn't do Lee Wan L.
I could. That's my boy right there.
Yeah.
I could probably identify Ari Aster, Jordan Peele.
Oh yeah, Jordan Peele, obviously. Mike obviously. Flanagan just crazy. Looks like a finance bro. So
Mike Flanagan, absolutely.
Man, there are not enough women directors.
Greta Gerwig. I could oh, probably yeah. peg her.
Yeah. Who?
Well.
That too.
I wouldn't say no. Yeah. But then you get into the big names, and it's like, that's just a man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, James Cameron, I know what he looks like.
Oh, yeah, I know what he looks like.
But if I saw him walking on the street, I probably wouldn't look twice.
Yeah.
If I saw Jordan Peele on the street, I would respectfully stay calm, but be very excited.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah, I do know what James Cameron looks like.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan, I know what he looks like.
I know what he looks like, but again, that's just a guy.
That's just a white dude.
That's just a man on the street.
Yeah.
I could probably, I maybe have walked past Christopher Nolan and did not look. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's possible.
It is possible.
That's one of the things, like, when I die,
mm-hmm.
I want to know all the people that I, like, talk to or engage with that, like, or, like, even saw, walked past, just barely missed.
Yeah.
You know?
I once shared an elevator with Trisha Paytas, but I did not know who she was at the time.
Yeah.
Because I didn't grow up, I didn't do the whole, like, YouTuber thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't a fan of them, so I didn't know who she was. And there was a talent agency in the office building that I worked at.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was going to the floor above her, and she got off. And then in the ride up to the next floor, the other girl in the elevator was like, oh my God, that was Trisha Paytas. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know who that is. And now I think back on that a lot.
Yeah. She only got really big in the last couple of years. She was like,
no, she was really big, but in the YouTube world. I feel like she's kind of broken containment recently.
Yes.
Because of TikTok. But she's been big in that world for a long time.
Sure.
Anyways, we got off topic.
Yeah. The other Guillermo del Toro fact that I have is that one of the orphan children in the photo that Laura's picking through has that name.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little fun nod. And then, of course, the dolls, one of them is also named that because one of the orphans was named that. Yeah. So one of the six orphans that are at the end, the ghosts, is named Guillermo too.
Little Guillermo. Yeah, that's fun. Because of this movie's popularity in Spain, in 2007, same year it came out, New Line Cinema bought the rights to produce an English language remake with Del Toro still producing.
Oh.
They cycled through. There were a few directors who were attached at some points. I think even in 2011, they announced that Amy Adams was going to be starring in it. And then, kaput, nothing after that. No news. So clearly it didn't happen because that was over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Almost 15 years ago now. And yeah. No news since then. I can't find anything about it past 2011. So it doesn't seem to be on the radar anymore. Probably not going to happen. But that's okay. Do we really need a remake? You can just watch the original.
And just dub it. Do that, honestly. But you could.
Yeah. I'm fine with dub. I don't personally like dubs, but they are more accessible. So that's fair.
Yeah.
Amy Adams, though, she would have killed it. But.
Yeah. She would have been good. I once again had to watch this movie twice.
Yeah.
I've been doing that a lot.
Yeah.
And the second time I watched it, I was also running around making dinner and doing my own voiceovers. I was reading in her voice. I was home alone.
Oh.
Reading in her voice.
Performing your own dubs.
Yeah. Performing my own dub. Yep.
Nice. I wish you would have recorded it and sent it to me.
Oh, yeah, I could have. I should have.
Yeah, I guess you're going to have to watch it a third time.
Okay. So a little backstory on how this ended up being made.
Mm-hmm.
Sergio G. Sanchez wrote the screenplay in 1996. It finally got to Bayona in 2004. And then Bayona and Guillermo del Toro are friends. So he went to del Toro and said, hey, help me produce this. But you got to double the budget and double the shooting schedule. And he did.
Yeah. That'd be so much fun to have a friend and you could just be like, hey, I would like double the budget and double the time, please. Yep. And they're like, okay.
Sure.
And they do it.
Sure.
Fine. Very fun.
Yeah.
They also apparently, killing off Benina midway through was not in the original script. That was added in by the director, Boyana. He said that basically they didn't really want there to be an obvious villain. And they thought that that would kind of throw audiences off. Because at first, you know, this kid goes missing and they suspect her. And so he was like, no, let's just kill her off midway through. Because then it's even more of a mystery, you know?
Well,
no,
she just because she's dead doesn't mean she didn't do it.
Very true.
You just couldn't find answers as easily.
Yeah. I guess it just keeps the mystery going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, I feel like when there is an obvious villain like that, a lot of the times audiences want that closure of like the face off. So I think just telling audiences straight away, like, that's not where this is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was frustrating for me because I was like, well, now what? Like, how is she going to prove it? Yeah.
Is that what you thought? You thought that she had taken him?
No, not necessarily. It was just frustrating that now we weren't going to find out for sure.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't use her to get more information on what did happen. I didn't know what happened. I try not to draw conclusions because I'm usually wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. The reveal in this movie, I guess it's a twist, but more of a reveal than a twist.
Yeah.
That I don't want to say she was responsible for his death, but
kinda.
Yeah. Incidentally, kind of, she was.
Yeah.
And when they were making the movie, they talked a lot about it because obviously it was, you know, after Sixth Sense came out, where everybody was trying to do their version of that, and it just kind of ended up being really cheap, bad twists that didn't make sense when you went back and rewatched it. So the writer Sanchez and Boyana like talked about that extensively, where they were like, we want this to just kind of be another layer to the plot, not necessarily play it as this cheap twist. I think it worked well.
Yeah. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of cheap anything in this. No cheap scares. Plot was solid.
Yeah. Which the few jump scares, I think there's like two jump scares-ish that happen. Huh?
There's more than that.
Are there? I feel like there's two like major ones. But they weren't even in the script either. They pushed Sanchez to put those in as well. Because he was like, I don't really like those types of scares.
Yeah.
And so he was like, as long as they're done well, I'm fine with it. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of scares, Geraldine Chaplin, who plays Aurora, J.A. Bayona was just like awestruck getting her to be a part of his film.
Yeah.
So they broke the ice on her first day by Bayona hid under a bed and grabbed her leg when she knelt down in the dark. And then Chaplin's scream is actually one that's in the movie. It made it into the film.
Such a wild way to break the ice.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
For apparently someone that you're that excited about.
Yeah. That you like respect as an actor. You're like, you know how I'm going to say hi.
I'm going to hide under this bed. Scare the shit out of you.
Yeah. Apparently he did that a lot though. He would do little things to kind of surprise the actors, like run in the background or hide to startle them to kind of get honest reactions. So he sounds like a little mischief maker.
Yeah. A little bit about the set.
Mm-hmm.
So the cave that Simone disappears in is actually, they use three separate caves because the caves were so cramped they couldn't get the lighting in. So they had to use three separate caves.
Mm.
And then the orphanage itself was an old colonial house that didn't have a lot of opportunity for the shots that Bayona was going for.
Yeah.
So a lot of the house had to be recreated on a soundstage, and over 80% of the film was actually shot in the studio.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it takes place indoors.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of my favorite fun facts is that the writer, Sanchez, he was talking to the little girl who plays the blind orphan that she had pretty eyes. And she said, "Oh, you like them? I picked them out myself." Mm-hmm. And he didn't know that she was actually blind, and she was diagnosed at a very, very young age. So she knew she was going to go blind. She wasn't born blind. And so one of the things that her parents let her do was pick out what eyes she wanted once that was going to happen. So she quite literally picked out her eyes herself.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of funny and cute. Yeah,
it's adorable.
Yeah.
Well, any other fun facts?
Only one.
Okay, hit me.
Just when writing, I think Sanchez was very into the idea of having it open for interpretation. So he didn't want it. He wanted it to be a very grounded story. So a lot of people watch this and think it's a ghost story. Mm-hmm. A lot of people watch this and think it was all in her head. And that's on purpose. That's what he wanted. He wanted there to kind of be two options that people could decide for themselves if it was really happening or not. Yeah. Which I think is funny because I watched this movie for the first time probably, I would say roughly 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen it since. So I remember probably about 5 years after watching it, someone was asking me for recommendations. And I was like, "Oh, you should watch The Orphanage." Because they wanted something that was like, you think it's supernatural, but then it's not. And I was like, "Oh yeah, The Orphanage." Because in my mind, I think I had just like decided that it was all in her mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my brain, it was so clearly not paranormal that when I rewatched it now today, I was like, "Oh, this could definitely be paranormal."
Yeah.
Why did I decide so definitively back in the day? Probably because I don't believe in that stuff, but it is definitely more open for interpretation. So I can't remember who I recommended that to, but to that person, I apologize because it could definitely be paranormal if you choose to take it that way.
Wait, so what's the other option? Paranormal or?
Basically that she was just losing her mind in grief.
Psychological.
Right, yes. That she was kind of imagining these things and led to the discoveries on her own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because things are all in your head doesn't mean they're not paranormal. Yeah, I think when the window fell and the paranormal investigators were there, that was really what tipped me off, that it was a paranormal movie.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Rewatching it, it did feel more like a paranormal movie. Yeah. I don't know why I was so dead set on that.
Crazy recommendation.
Yeah. Although, I think you could still interpret it as not. Because, like, her husband doesn't believe them.
Yeah.
He's just kind of like, "Girl, we got to get out of this place, you know?" Yeah. Which, in real life, that would probably be me, so... I don't know.
Just because you don't believe in the paranormal doesn't mean that it's not paranormal.
Just because you believe in paranormal doesn't mean it is paranormal.
But yeah.
Yeah. What can I say? I'm just no fun.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah. Did you have any other fun facts? Was that it?
No, that's it. I'm ready to rate it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. How scary did you think it was?
I gave it a 1.5 out of 5. Only because the window jump scare did get me on rewatch. So yeah. I'll give it that. And then I do remember, at least the first time watching it, now I know what happened, but the first time I watched it, I feel like there were a lot of moments of tension. And it is kind of that slow burn dread feeling. So yeah. I gave it a little bump. What about you?
I gave it a 3. Yeah. It got me pretty good.
It's a little spooky. Yeah.
It is a little spooky. The scene where she's playing 1, 2, 3 knock on the wall with the kids, that one, I was just waiting for the ball to drop on that one. And it was so long. Like, not too long, but it was like such a long scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene where Aurora's on camera and her face sort of distorts in like the like infrared light.
Yeah.
And then like the children are in the background screaming through like a spirit box. Spirit box really freaks me out. The sound a spirit box makes freaks me the fuck out. I don't know what it is, but I don't like that at all. So yeah.
Fair. How sexy did you think it was?
Not at all. I gave it a 0.5 out of 5. This is a dusty, crusty movie.
Jesus.
Yeah. Not sexy. Not fun. Not sexy.
Yeah.
What'd you give it?
I also gave it a 0.5. I agree. I wasn't expecting to hear the word crusty, but sure. Yeah, it is dusty for sure. And it's just, it's, this movie's fucking sad. It's not. Yeah. It doesn't have a lot of sexy vibes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How fucked up did you think it was?
I gave it a 1.5. Okay. There's a lot of children that don't make it. In fact, almost all of the children don't make it. Mm-hmm. And in pretty terrible ways.
Yeah.
And then also, little bonus bump for Benina's death. Her jaw just...
Yeah, the jaw.
Gaping open. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. I gave it a 2.5 for the same reasons. Yeah. Lots of children in peril. Some good, unique gore.
Yeah.
The scene with the children screaming and the spirit box thing. Didn't like that.
How were you with the beach scene? I forgot about that. Oh, hell yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, all I saw was her limping and bleeding.
Yeah, that happened. And I immediately was like, oh, because I knew you'd already watched it. So I was like,
yeah. Fuck.
But at this point, I feel like you're pretty good about checking for your
trigger. I didn't. So. It was just a coincidence both times that I missed it. I slept through it the first time. And then the second time I was making dinner. So I was looking away and I came back and she had blood all over her leg. And I was like, good thing I didn't see that happen.
Yeah. It does. There's no sound.
Oh, good.
It's just visual.
Yeah.
But still.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, well, it's both. But the sound is what I remember from me breaking my own. But doing that, when that happened to me, the sound is what I remember. So then like having a visual associated with it makes it so much worse. That's like when you screamed at that thing. I have your scream associated with like any nightmares I have. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I apologize for that.
Thank you.
I thought I was just having a silly, goofy time at an escape room with my friends, you know?
Nope.
I didn't know my screaming was going to upset you so. All right. Overall, what did you think of The Orphanage?
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't let you finish here.
Oh my gosh, you're so fine.
Yeah. This movie was not for me.
Oh, okay.
I see the appeal. It was effective. Emotional in a way that not a lot of horror movies are.
Yeah.
Acting good. Design good. I thought, just a little tidbit, the shot of her coming down the basement stairs, like into the black, and it's like lit. I just thought that was very well like composed. I liked that scene.
Yeah.
Anyway. And I was like, wow, this could be like a background of somebody's computer or something. Anyway, my heart tells me to give it a 2. But I know it deserves better than that, so I bumped it up all the way to a 3.
What? You just didn't like the story, or?
I just did.
You just said I
for me.
Didn't like it, but then listed every good quality about it. So
it just is not a movie that I'm going to seek out again. It doesn't have rewatchability for me. I mean, I know I watched it twice, but I half watched it the first time. I slept, mostly. I would never seek this movie out again. I don't want to think about it ever again.
It's just vibes only? Oh, is it because it's sad or?
Yeah, it's just like, it was not fun.
Okay. No, it's not.
I'm glad I watched it. It was good. But like,
you didn't like it.
Personally?
Yeah.
Not, nope.
So personally, you would give it a 2. Critically, you would give it
more than a 3, probably. It's but okay. I split
and then
the
average
difference.
It out to a 3.
To a 3. Yeah.
Damn. Okay. So you don't think it was snubbed?
Well, no, I do. I do. I think, okay. I think it should have gotten much more acclaim than it did.
Yeah.
But again,
you know what? That's fair, though. Being able to separate your personal enjoyment versus knowing it's a good film, but you didn't enjoy it.
Yeah. If I have any other friends besides you that enjoy Children in Peril in a horror film,
I don't enjoy Children in Peril.
Perhaps recommend this one to them. Fans of Pan's Labyrinth, fans of the others.
Yeah.
Watch it. You'll love it.
Yeah.
That's probably why I have never seen Pan's Labyrinth again, because it's literally entirely a Child in Peril.
It is.
But the soundtrack slaps, so. And I know a masterpiece when I see it.
Valid.
Thank you. What'd you give it?
I gave it 4 out of 5.
Sure.
Which is what it deserves, because it is a very good film. It's a great story. It's well acted. It's well shot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It deserved the awards that it got. It should have been nominated for Best Foreign Film at the Oscars. I think it was snubbed. And personally, I do enjoy the story. I mean, I don't, like, it's not a fun movie. It's very sad. It's very heavy. But some of my favorite movies are really sad, so. Maybe that says something about me. I don't know. I just remember, the first time I watched this and finding out that's how he died, I couldn't stop thinking about it for weeks.
Yeah. And that's exactly why I won't rate it higher, because I will not stop thinking about it.
Yeah, it is truly a horrific way to find out your child died.
Yeah. Which leads us to our next question. Would you survive?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely the fuck not.
Okay, yeah.
I find out Laura's that happens. Out. Oh, yeah. I'm toast. Yeah. I don't even think I would have lasted as long as she did.
Oh, okay.
Like,
the second it happens.
No. I mean, like, I don't think I would have lasted until finding him.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the second your kid goes missing. But I think that's the problem, though, with people going missing is, like, not having that answer.
Yeah, that's true.
Because she, in her heart, believes that he is still alive.
Yeah.
That would be, I can't even fucking imagine.
Yeah, I mean, either way, I'm toast. It's just not happening. How about you?
I don't know. I think this is one of the harder ones for me to put myself in the situation, because I do not have a child. I don't plan on having a child. So I can't and will never understand truly what it means to be a parent. I think I would be more like the dad. I think I would assume, especially after 6 months, that he is dead.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would handle that well, but I don't think I would find him, because I don't think I would stay in the house. Well, maybe I would, though, because I don't believe in spirits, though, so I'm not, like, seeking that out. Yeah. So if we're saying the spirits are real and they helped her, I think either way, I'm probably not finding out what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably check myself into a care facility. I don't think I would mentally handle that very well.
Yeah. But you live.
I think so. Mm. Not a great life. I'd probably not want to be living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Yeah. Terrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad this is a movie and kids don't actually go missing.
Yeah. Or die.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in real life, thank God.
No.
It's because God carries us.
God.
Sorry. I'm just kidding. All right. Well, heavy movie. I'm sad that you didn't enjoy it, but.
Did you think I would? Did you think that I would watch this movie and be like, hell yeah, let's do it again, brother.
I didn't think you'd be having, like, a romp of a time. But I thought you would, I guess you do appreciate it.
Yeah,
but
I thought you would appreciate it.
Like it because you appreciated it. But I guess that's not how that worked out. So,
no.
You know what? You can't win them all.
Yeah, no.
What are you going to do? All right. Do you want to predict next week's movie?
I do, but I do know a little bit about this movie.
Oh, okay. You actually, it was on our list, but you requested it be put on the calendar.
Yes.
Because you like Barry Keoghan.
Yeah, I like him in Saltburn a lot.
Yeah, so you were like, hey, more of that, please.
Yes.
Put it on.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
No problem.
I know that Barry plays a little freak.
As he does.
That eats spaghetti with his hands. And he tries to, I don't know why. And the vibes are like Beau is Afraid vibes. It's, what's that called? Like
surrealist,
absurdist.
Okay.
Which is probably why he's eating spaghetti with his hands. And then he tries to infiltrate a family and become their son. And then when they don't let him become their son, I don't actually know what happens after that, but I'm assuming I think that the family worships a golden deer. And because they don't let him be a part of the family, he breaks into their mansion.
Yep.
And destroys their false god deer.
He kills the sacred deer. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that it's a love-hate movie. People either love it or they hate it.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. It's not a bad guess.
Thank you.
You hit some points.
Thank you.
Yeah. It is absurdist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew that.
Barry Keoghan, little freak.
Yep. Implied.
Yeah. If he's in a movie, he's a little freak.
He's a little freak. Does he eat spaghetti with his hands?
I don't remember that part, but like it sounds like it could happen in the movie. You saying that, I was like, does he do that? And then I was like, probably. That feels right.
I think there's like a poster or something of him just like eating spaghetti. I'm pretty sure. And there's no fork involved.
No, why would there be?
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds right.
Yeah, okay, good.
I don't remember that specific part. That's not what stood out to me in this film, but sure, yeah, I would guess.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, good, excellent. This is, what's his name, Yorgos Lanthimos? How do you say his name?
Just like you did.
Wow, amazing.
Nailed it, first try.
Yeah, thank you.
It is Yorgos.
I liked, what's it called, Poor Creatures?
Poor Things.
Poor Things. I actually did like it. And that's
him. I still haven't seen that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You should. It's absurdist, but fun. And it's got a great cast. Emma Stone's growing on me.
Nice.
Yeah, she's in that new movie, Begonia, which I think is also him.
It is. It's on my list. I will definitely watch it at one point.
Oh, yeah. Begonia and also... We got to see Begonia when it comes out. I don't think it's horror, so we can't do like a podcast of it necessarily, but
we'll discuss that in our free time.
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds fun.
Yeah. Great. Great. Well, thanks for making me watch that.
Sorry.
Whatever. It had to be done. It had to be seen. I'm glad I watched it just the once.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Next foreign film, No Kids in Peril. Great.
Just like any film. No film, foreign or stateside.
No more. Enough with the children.
Though I will say, a foreign film, the last foreign film that we watched with children in peril was like one of my favorite movies ever.
Eden Lake?
No. Was that foreign?
Oh, yeah. It was British. It's not foreign language, I guess.
Foreign language film. It might not have been the last one, but what's it called? It's also in Espanol.
Oh, When Evil Lurks.
Yes.
You thought that was our last foreign film?
No.
That was like 2 years ago.
Our last foreign film with a child in peril. Got it. Okay. But it may not have been the last one.
I thought you just meant our last foreign film. I was like, no.
Yeah, no. That has probably the most graphic example of a child in peril.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And I love that movie. It fucking slaps.
Yeah. So how am I to know, Katie?
Yeah.
How am I to know the limits?
Yeah, there's a double standard, I guess.
You just keep me on my toes. Yeah. There's no predicting you.
Oh, shoot.
All right. Well, I'm sorry I made you sit through that. My bad.
Thank you.
It's a great film, though. If anybody's listening, she does agree that it is technically a good movie, so you should watch it.
Yeah.
And let us know in the comments your favorite movie about kids in peril. And please feel free to like and subscribe, and we will see you next week for The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
And then August, and then I'll say happy August, and it'll actually be true.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. See you then. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.